Why did he plan this?
Why did he plan?
Why did he plan this accident?
This is what is the subject matter of the next two or three verses. Why he did all this? Your question has come exactly at the right moment. Because that is exactly what is discussed in the next three verses or four verses. If you are in a hurry, then we can stop here. If you are not in a hurry, I can take 10 minutes more and finish it.
We are in no hurry.
No hurry? You are sure? Then I'll take 10 minutes more to finish this question. This will answer this question. There is a reason for doing all this. And let me say in one word, just for the sake of giving a straight answer. To manifest in the individual the totality of the Isha, Purusha and Atman. In the individual, how to compress the whole universal transcendental, that which is Swayambhu, how to compress him in multiplicity of individuals, in every individual. For that reason, he has planned this whole thing. If he had only to manifest himself fully, it is finished, already done. Nothing further is needed. He can manifest himself fully. But to work out this in every individual, his totality, to take a small analogy, you have seen small mirrors which are sewn in some dresses. Particularly in Gujarat we have saris and so on, in which small mirrors are sewn. Now if any individual stands before these mirrors, then in every mirror that individual is fully reflected, but with a certain angle. The totality of the individual is reflected with a certain angle. Now to arrive at this kind of an effect, you have to create small mirrors. And each mirror should be capable of reflecting the whole. If you don't achieve that, then you cannot have this effect.
So why does he want to create this effect? Why does he have that desire to create this effect?
Let me say first of all, he has no desire at all. If he had a desire, then he won't be perfect. Because then there is some imperfection in him which he wants to cure. But he has no desire at all. But he is capable of it. He is capable of it. If you are capable of it, And if you do it, and if you don't do it, you will say, why does he not do it? You will ask the contrary question, no? If he is capable of doing it, and if he does not do it, you will ask the question, why does he not do it? So he will answer by saying that I can remain without doing it. I can also do it. In both the conditions, I am perfectly delightful. But if I do it, do you have any objection to it? I am capable of it and I am doing it. So the answer is that because he is capable of doing it, and because he has no need of doing it, in either condition he has delight, therefore he freely does it. Does it meet your question?
But if either way is his sense of delight, then by having created us because he is capable of doing it, are we not all going through the throngs of this life and the different stages of it? Because he is anyway delightful in either way, so why are we all going through this?
Good, I am very happy. This is the real question. And why should his delight consist in giving pain to us?
Pain, I wouldn't say pain. Like
no, but there is pain.
But then all of our souls
yes.
are in a certain stage of elevation,
right.
depending on our purusha.
Right.
But why are we going through all this? What is the end result? Just he is delightful in either way. So why does he?
This question would arise if you are different from God. If he would remain in a state of delight, and he enjoys your pain and your struggle while you are struggling and he is delightful. But that is not the case.
Excuse me, then is he just allowing himself to go through all these stages?
This is it.
Himself?
This is it, exactly.
So this is just his play with him own, with his own self.
Precisely.
That is what it is?
Precisely. That is why it is Advaita. There are no two realities. It is exactly this, precisely.
So then, we as human beings should not worry that why are we going through this? It is he who is going through.
Quite true. Precisely. That is the art of life. That is precisely what you say in the very first sentence.
But to sit here and listen to you and come to conclusions is very easy. But the moment we walk out of this room and we get back into Maya or life, it doesn't even take us a split second to think it is I. And then, maybe I'm going
on. No, you're quite, it's a difficult thing, quite true.
Then I think what any one of us really needs a direction is how do we then control that I
That's
the moment
right.
we walk out of this room.
Quite right.
Because now, as you're logically putting it, it seems all very easy and it seems so clear.
Very fine.
And clarity-wise, we are one and here. It is all very well to say it, but it is absolutely next to impossible to actually believe and follow it concretely.
That is why in the next verses now, the Upanishad says there are two things in this world. There is avidya and there is vidya. Exactly when you go out of this room, now you come across two very important statements that what we have, our real problems consist of vidya and avidya. This is where we are actually in reality. Or you might say, God is now confronted with avidya and vidya, both created by him. But this is where he is caught himself. When you are caught, it means God himself is caught. When I am caught, means God himself is caught. And God is not worried about it. God knows that he is caught and he is chosen to do so. This world is not created by a mistake, as many philosophers believe, that this world is an error. There is a fall of God into this world, not at all. This is not what Upanishad says, not at all. Nothing is unplanned. So there is no fall. It is God's plan. And there are real steps which are described. His Kavi, Manishi, Swayam, Paribhu. All these steps are described. And nothing happens by accident. It is all pre-planned.